Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government with an update from the legislature, and also health news, an update on a rabid fox found in Grahamsville, and scheduling vaccination clinics to react to that. Access to health care is getting harder in our region, especially for our rural communities, after sweeping Medicaid changes in federal bills. But a new grassroots effort called the Highland Health Access Initiative is stepping in to help. Matter Inc.'s Oscar Clevenger has the story of the August issue of Sullivan County's youth-powered newspaper, plus a preview of the latest episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela, and we'll meet the graphic artist behind our new 35th anniversary t-shirts. That's coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Stocks opened sharply lower on Wall Street this morning as the Labor Department reported a sharp slowdown in the U.S. job market. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow fell more than 600 points in early trading.
U.S. employers added just 73,000 jobs in July, and updated figures show virtually no job growth in May and June. Meanwhile, the unemployment rate inched up to 4.2%. The federal government continues to cut jobs and is down about 84,000 since the beginning of the year. Factories also cut 11,000 jobs in July. The manufacturing sector has been hard hit by President Trump's tariffs. As expected, Trump is calling for even higher tariffs on goods from many countries. But in an order issued Thursday, he pushed back the effective date of many of those import taxes for at least another week. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
A conference at the United Nations is renewing calls for a two-state solution to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. NPR's Aya Betraoui reports.
The conference, chaired by Saudi Arabia and France, included the participation of countries like Canada and the UK, as well as Japan, Mexico, Brazil, and others from the Mideast and beyond. They called for, quote, time-bound and irreversible steps that lead to a Palestinian state living in peace next to Israel, something Israel's government strongly rejects, saying that would threaten its security. The conference also said there must be no Israeli occupation or forced displacement of Palestinians from Gaza, and insisted Hamas must hand over governance of Gaza and weapons to the Palestinian Authority. Hamas and other armed factions in Gaza responded to the conference at the UN, saying resistance is a right under occupation until a Palestinian state is established. Aya Betraoui, NPR News.
Lawmakers in El Salvador have approved major constitutional changes that would allow President Nayib Bukele to seek re-election indefinitely. The National Assembly, which is mostly aligned with his party, voted to eliminate presidential term limits and extend each term from 5 to 6 years. Bukele has cast himself as one of President Trump's strongest allies in Latin America, backing his immigration and deportation agenda. Residents in Texas Hill Country are demanding answers after last month's deadly flooding killed more than 130 people. In Kerrville, one of the hardest hit areas, people turned out to speak before a special committee of the Texas legislature on Thursday. Blaze Ganey from member station KUT reports.
There are people who are very frustrated and unhappy with how things were handled. Some of them still displaced to this day. Mind you, this happened on July 4th. But a lot of people here lined up ahead of the meeting starting just to tell lawmakers what they experienced.
That's Blaze Ganey from member station KUT reporting. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 764 points, the Nasdaq down 524. This is NPR News in Washington. Student loan borrowers on the SAVE plan will start seeing interest charges again today. The Department of Education says it's complying with a court order that blocked the Biden-era repayment plan last month. SAVE was designed to mostly lower monthly payments and speed up debt relief, but 8 million borrowers have been in forbearance with no interest for the past year. That relief is now over. President Trump's education secretary is urging borrowers to switch to a different repayment plan, while congressional Democrats are calling for the interest rate restart to be reversed. NASA and SpaceX are preparing to launch a crew of four to the International Space Station this morning. Marion Summerall from Central Florida Public Media reports from the Kennedy Space Center.
When the mission launches, two NASA astronauts, a Japanese astronaut, and a Russian cosmonaut will fly on SpaceX's Dragon capsule. The mission will be SpaceX's 19th time sending humans to space and the 12th mission with NASA under the agency's Commercial Crew program. Once at the ISS, the crew will spend about 6 months on the station, performing experiments and research like studying plant cells, human stem cells, and more. This will be NASA and SpaceX's second attempt to launch the crew after the mission was scrubbed Thursday because of storm clouds and weather concerns. For NPR News, I'm Marion Summerall in Orlando.
Stocks are continuing to trade sharply lower on Wall Street at this hour. The Dow was down 717 points, the Nasdaq down 502. This is NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their premium travel card, Venture X. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Well, every Friday we get to check in with Dan Hoost, the Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
A little nippy outside, a little chillier.
It is pleasant. I walked outside the government center. Somebody said, hey, fall's back. So I was like, I don't know about that. I actually like the temperature where it is now. It may be a little sunnier and just slightly warmer, but the heat and humidity. And, you know, I always spare a pack of spare shirt for Riverfest, which, of course, we had at the DVAA Sunday. And I definitely needed to put that shirt on because people are like, did you just step out of the shower wearing that or something? So it was hot and humid. And listen, it comes with the territory. And that's why I captain the drinks tent at Riverfest, because I get all the hydration that I need without dashing around. So the weather is okay. I just, I get it where some people are like, hey, it's summer. It's supposed to be hot and humid. So,
well, we can get deeper into the weather, but let's get a little deeper into action that's happened recently. Although there was no legislature meeting yesterday per schedule, per the calendar.
Yeah. The prior three Thursdays they had met. So, and they will be again this Thursday starting at 9 a.m. committee meetings. And you can come in person, of course, or you can watch online and you can watch live. Or you can watch it after the fact archived. And I've said this before, but it bears mentioning again. If you want to watch after the fact, you actually can click. I did this myself just the other day. You can click on the agenda item you're interested in, and the video is indexed
so that you
can go right to that section of the meeting. Because I get it. As much as I try to encourage people to watch everything that their legislature and elected officials are doing, I know most people feel like it's, you know, sitting down and watching C-SPAN or something. You know, it's, you're going really for what you're interested for. Well, we recognize that, and we've set it up so that you can go right to the part of the agenda you're interested in and watch the discussion.
So meetings resume next Thursday. One of the things that we've been talking about in the last day or two since the government sent this out is a new rabies case found in the area, a rabid fox found in Grahamsville. There was recently another case of rabies in the Calicoon area. So again, we want to make sure that people are informed. Tell us what's going on there and what's being planned to help with vaccinations.
Yep. The fox is deceased. Was tested, came back positive for rabies. I don't believe anybody was bitten in this situation. I think in the Calicoon raccoon situation, somebody was. But what it is really just the regular reminder, especially this time of year, rabies is among us. It's here in Sullivan County. We are not going to eradicate it, but we need to take precautions against it because it can be transferred to humans. And it's the closest thing to a zombie-like virus, actually, that humans can get. And it's invariably fatal if it's not treated. So we need to make sure that we protect ourselves and our pets and the people that we love around us. The wildlife, there's only so much we can do. It's going to continue spreading around there. So this rabid fox was found in the Grahamsville area. And public health was informed, activated with it. It's usually our first response team is public health. They know the drill. And then it got sent up to the state lab where it was identified as having rabies. And if somebody had been exposed to it, we would have gone through, I believe, their shots and other things that you have to do, a certain regimen. I'm not familiar with the exact details of it. Hope to never find out personally. Mm-hmm. But I do have indoor cats. And in addition to all the other things you have to worry about, like ticks and fleas and animal fights and things like that, rabies is one. But thankfully, unlike a lot of the rest of those, there's a pretty easy solution, which is getting the vaccination for rabies. And you can get that for dogs, cats, and ferrets. And we will be offering that coming up very soon. I believe August 12th is our next, our public health next free rabies vaccination clinic. It's going to be at Hanafee Park in Liberty from 6 to 7:30 p.m. This is something that all you have to do is come and show that you're a Sullivan County resident. There's no pre-registration. We ask, of course, that you have your animals leashed or caged when you bring them so that they aren't creating a ruckus or escaping. I actually had that one time happen when I took a little kitten to a rabies clinic. Did not have him in a cage, and Dusty was his name. I never saw him again.
Oh.
It's a little bit of a sad story. I'm sorry to ruin anyone's Friday morning, but this is just a hit home the point that you need to make sure that they are secured, leash or cage, and not just for their safety, for everybody else's as well. We are thinking of doing a free rabies vaccination clinic in the Grahamsville area now that there's been this exposure as well, but these things take a little time to set up, so the next one will definitely be on the 12th. Hanafee Park in Liberty, 6 to 7:30 p.m. Just show up with some identification showing you're a Sullivan County resident.
New York state law does require rabies vaccination for all dogs, cats, and ferrets over 3 months of age. The initial shots are good for 1 year. Booster shots can extend protection for up to 3 years. If you're not sure about your pet, check with your vet. Or you can also come to this free clinic that's coming up August 12th
in
Liberty.
And if you aren't sure of your pet's vaccination history, we will give them the one-year booster.
And again, you know, we're bringing this up. It's not, as you mentioned, it's not a rare disease in the region or in Sullivan County wildlife, but it does come up, and it can be deadly. So just a reminder to keep your animals safe, because then that keeps you safe too.
And as cute and furry as some of those wild animals are, they are wild. And even if they don't have rabies, they could bite you or scratch you or hurt you in another way. And listen, you get bitten or scratched by a non-rabid animal, you may still have to go through the rabies shots because you don't know, especially if the animal hasn't been caught and been able to be tested. So let's just, you know, watch them from a distance, appreciate them, shoot all the pictures you want and the video and stuff, but don't go up and try to pet them.
This reminds me yesterday when I drove home and pulled up in the driveway, and at the end of the driveway was a young buck in our yard just staring at me. Not that I was concerned about the rabies necessarily, but I'm like, I'm going to stay in the car.
Yeah.
you keep going.
Uh-huh.
All right. I'm going to let you do your thing, sir. And it finally turned and ran up into the woods.
Uh-huh. Yeah, probably in the end more scared of you than probably, you were wondering about it. But I had to figure out first, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Let's talk about something that we have actually talked about before, some security screening that's going to begin at the government center on Monday. I think I saw some things popping around social media where people may have expressed some surprise or concern about this. But this is something that we've talked about and something that's just part of regular upgrades to security at the government center.
This has been in the works for almost 2 years now. It's been discussed at legislative meetings, and it really reflects the need that the government center has to become secure. Like we have other county facilities, like our social services facility, our courthouse. You can't get in without talking at least to a security officer and being vetted for, do you have an appointment, or being wanded or going through a metal detector. In the case of the government center, we are not going to be saying, do you have an appointment? You don't have to have an appointment to visit some of the offices in there, but there is going to be a detector there. And it's, you can call it a metal detector, but it's more high tech than that. It's really a weapons detector. It's not going to trigger an alert if you're carrying your keys or your cell phone or just some normal metallic object on you. It's going to be if it's a gun, if it's a knife over 3 inches blade length, and if it's something otherwise that the system thinks could be utilized as a weapon. There'll also be a bag scanner with it, where if you have a bag, my understanding at this point is if it's a bag that has a strap with it or is of a certain size, it will have to go through the scanner. But that the scanner is so fast, actually, your bag will beat you to the end of the line. So it's what we all go through when we go to a theme park or a stadium or the airport. We're not going to ask, though, people to be taking off any items of clothing or anything. If there is a need to take someone aside, then they will be wanded. And then I'm told that the hand pat-downs, if those are ever considered necessary, and I'm not sure that they will, would be done male officer for male pat down, female officer for female pat down. But I think it would only ever get as far as the wanding. We don't want it to be feeling like you're walking into some sort of prison or something. We want it to feel like you're walking into a secure facility where both you and the people who are serving you are kept safe.
The government center has entrances on two sides. Mm-hmm. There's that entrance from the main parking lot and then that front entrance. Is that North Street? Is that the...
Yeah,
there's a bank of doors there. Does this new process restrict access through those doors, or how does that work?
Yeah, you'll have to come through the sliding doors that are there, and then as soon as you come in, there's going to be sheriff's deputies guiding you over to where you need to walk through or be wanded. If you're concerned, for example, if you have some sort of implantable medical device, you'll need to talk with your doctor or the device manufacturer ahead of time on that. If you still are unsure, just tell our deputy. We'll hand wand you instead of having you walk through the system. The bag scanner uses an X-ray. The walkthrough detector does not. It's a different kind of technology. So, and we actually doubled the amount of deputies now that we have from 2 to 4 there, so that we're going to get people through as quickly and efficiently as possible. Because remember, not just visitors and the public are coming through that, all staff will have to as well. The only folks who will be able to bypass that are sworn law enforcement officers.
And again, not in reaction to a specific threat.
No.
But something that has been under discussion for a little while at the legislature, too.
It has been. And employees in particular have been concerned about it, because if you think about it, you can't get into your schools anymore without going through some security. You can't get into other county facilities. There's a lot of places you can't just walk into. But the government center, for the past 50 years, because the government center is coming up on its 50th birthday next month, has been just walk in, do what you need to do. You could be carrying a weapon. It's actually illegal to have guns in a municipal building in New York State on your person unless, like I said, you're a sworn law enforcement officer. But I'm sure there have been people who have walked in with that. And not that something has happened, but the legislature, the county manager, the public safety commissioner, all alike, we're responsible for people's safety here. We need to make sure that these procedures and protocols are in place in as least intrusive a way as possible, but in a secure fashion as well. And I just look at the government center as a place where so many people come to. It's high profile, which means that makes us a target there. And there should be, as an employee, I applaud it as well, that there should be some security there that still allows people to get in and out efficiently. And like I said, doesn't feel intrusive, but keeps us all secure.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more with Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, including news about a quality of life survey that starts today. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Ira Flatow from Science Friday. Public media organizations just lost federal funding, and it is a big deal. This cut will have serious long-term consequences for the service we provide to you unless we replace that funding with support from more listeners. The future of public media is in your hands, so please go to the station's website to start or increase your monthly sustaining donation today. And thanks.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Writer Dori Shafrir always felt pressure to hit big life milestones on a particular timeline.
Like, write a book, maybe get married, buy an apartment. I mean, it was just like this list. And of course, by the time I turned 30, like, I had done none of these things.
Late Bloomers. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're talking with Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, as we do every Friday. I mentioned before the break, there's a quality of life survey that starts today. In the note that you sent me about things that we're going to talk about today, you said it's randomized quality of life survey. What does that mean?
What that means is it's actually a scientific survey. It is being done by a company called Zen City that we've partnered with for a number of different things. But one of the offerings that they do that was very interesting to county leadership was a quality of life survey. This is different from the health survey that our public health in Garnet just finished. It'll ask a few questions about that. But it is an anonymous survey where our Zen City folks are actually putting it out. I'm not involved directly in that respect. I helped figure out just a couple questions. The rest of the questions are based on the scientific protocol for asking these questions. And basically, it's about how do you like where you live? What kind of services do you appreciate? That kind of thing. Targeted to county government. And about 400 people in Sullivan County are going to get an invite, usually on through their social media or a text message or something of that nature, that, like I said, is randomized. I don't know who the people are going to be. And they will be invited to participate in this survey. And our hope is to get as many people as invited to participate, although obviously, as you know, with surveys, which I think JFF's running right now, you just got to keep chugging along with it because people are like, yeah, maybe one day or whatever. But
side note, be sure to take our community survey at WJFFradio.org.
Mm-hmm. I have. Thank you. So, and so we're hoping that the people who get this invitation will participate in the survey because it's going to go back to the legislature and say, okay, this is what people are saying they do like about the area, what they don't like about the area, about their quality of life, and about the services that we provide. It should only take 5 to 10 minutes. It's not one of those endless surveys that keeps going on, and you're wondering, why did I sign up for this? But it is one of those that will have probably more of an impact than most other surveys that you're going to fill out, except maybe the JFF survey. because it, like I said, it's going to stay local. It's going to go right back to legislators and it's going to have actual, I don't know what they're called, analytical scientists, I think, who have reviewed it, vetted it and presented it in a report. And we'll share it with the public as well when it's out. But this is unlike any survey we've ever done before.
So you said it goes back to the legislature at large then, or does it go to a particular department that then presents it to the legislature?
The legislature. We'll share it with all our commissioners and the legislature, but it will help define what we're already starting the strategic planning process for next year. And we're actually, for the year after that, we're going to have a new software solution that will allow us to basically on the fly update our strategic goals per department and division. This survey, which we hope to do on an annual basis, will be crucial to informing that because we need that data to understand what it is that the people of the county want. And, we're trying to reach out to all demographics, all ethnicities, all different religious backgrounds. So if you get this, consider yourself sort of special that you get a chance to play a role in something that not everybody in Sullivan County is going to be able to participate in. And that's, again, a scientific. It's not meant to be discriminatory. It's meant to be a scientific, randomized approach.
Our survey as well is part of our strategic planning. So it's that's why I was asking, like, where is this going to go? So the strategic planning part is crucial, as you said, to get that feedback. One thing that you mentioned about how it's being distributed might raise some concerns for some folks, or something that I thought of, if I'm getting something like this from the government on my social media or an email, I might initially think, oh, is this a scam? Are they fishing for something? What should folks look for?
Let me put it this way, because this is the easiest way for folks. If you get something like this and you're not sure that it is legitimate, I am perfectly willing, being sort of the county's liaison with this, to vet that for you. Screenshot it. Email it to me. Call me up. I'll give it to you right now. My email address is dan.hust. That's dan.hust at sullivanny.gov. sullivani.gov. So it looks like Sullivani. I know it's weird, but some people want to put an extra
way to remember.
There. Yes. Or 845-807-0450. That's 807-0450. Because it's one of those things you really, I think the only way to know for certain is if you were to contact me, because I can't just tell you, oh, just because it has the Sullivan County logo on it. Because the minute I say that, you know, some scammer puts a Sullivan County logo on something. And we've had people parading around as our office for the aging in text messages and stuff. Yeah. So I'm not about to say that, you know, as long as it has the county logo on it and it looks legitimate, you're okay. I'm saying if you have a concern about it, contact me directly and I can tell you for certain.
I mean, these scams every day, like I am asking folks here when I get something, because it's unbelievable. Like today I got something from Meta, the people that own Facebook and Instagram, saying our account has been restricted. And,
oh, yeah.
But the email they sent it to was like a weird email.
Yes.
Like, so I'm like, this seems like a scam. No. Like,
I get those actually every week on our Facebook pages. Yeah. They say we're going to suspend your account, and every single one of them is a scam. So
that's why, I'm, you know, so folks, so if you have any questions, reach out to Dan.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. This is my job as director of communications, to communicate and to help you feel better about something you got that you think is from the county, but you're not sure. I'm happy to answer those questions.
Another thing you're communicating about, Community Wellness Day is coming up August 23rd. What's going on at Community Wellness Day in Monticello?
This is our public health department doing this with Action Toward Independence. It is going to be at De Hoyos Park, which is in Monticello, rain or shine, on Saturday, August 23rd from 10 to 2. Bring your favorite cuddly friend and take care of them at the Teddy Bear Clinic. Now, I would say they're talking about teddy bears, not your actual live cats or dogs kind of thing. Okay. Right. So that's for kids. Bring their teddy bears. First 100 kids get a free stuffed buddy. For adults though, who maybe are past the teddy bear phase. I don't know. Maybe you're
not.
We have free health screenings, workshops, prizes and giveaways, crafts and do-it-yourself stations, a magic show, and a lot more fun going on. It's just a whole fun time to come and learn about health, but also spend it with people in your community. Again, that's going to be Saturday, August 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., rain or shine, at De Hoyos Park in Monticello.
And the DPW hosted a dozen scouts from 10 Mile River Scout Camp. Why were they there? What did they
This was cool. Recognize? I didn't know that this was something we were doing until just before we did it, and I'm glad we're doing it. We're going to continue doing it. We have, I think, one of the nation's larger Boy Scout reservations in Sullivan County, 10 Mile River, which is in an area of Sullivan County that probably plenty of people haven't been in before or just driven through and maybe didn't even know that it was there. But it has multiple different Boy Scout camps. We had scouts from, I think it's called Camp Kiowa. And these are scouts from the tri-state area, Jersey, New York City, Long Island area, who are working on badges in architecture, surveying, drafting, and there was a fourth one I can't remember, but that's okay. It's all about
engineering. Construction,
engineering, thank you. They're all interested in this, maybe even as a career when they get older. Some of these scouts were actually, I think, only 11 or 12. Others were in their teens. But we had about a dozen of them come to, on Wednesday, to our bridge rebuild. Actually, it's complete replacement of a bridge, a $6.5 million project south of Forestburg, across the Neversink River in a tiny little hamlet called Oakland Valley. But it's a big bridge, and we have a temporary bridge set up there, and they got to visit that site, put on the vests and the hard hats, go down by the piers that are in the water. There is no deck on the bridge yet, but they also got to see the temporary bridge. They got to see the heavy equipment at work. I think they, like me, were wishing they could get in the excavator and run it a little bit, but we couldn't do that. The next day, they went over to the Ferndale Transfer Station to see how we take care of our waste. And then I believe yesterday, they actually sat down with our Division of Public Works and understood what our DPW engineers and staff do as well. So I think they got a thorough understanding of some of the projects that the county is working on with our roads and bridges in here in Sullivan County. And I hope it inspired them. It certainly did me. And I posted some photos and video on social media about it.
All right. Dan Hoost, Sullivan County Government Spokesperson, Communications Director, and General Communicator. Every Friday, we get to talk to you. Thank you so much.
I love it. So thank you for having me, as always.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, a new local effort aiming to improve rural health care in our region. Manor Inc.'s Oscar Clevenger reports on a collaboration between NYU and Sullivan 180 in the August issue of the county's award-winning youth-led newspaper, out today. We'll hear more next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hello, I'm Thane Peterson of Living Jazz. Recently, we lost one of our local jazz greats, Hal Galper. He was a pianist, composer, arranger, band leader, educator, writer, and great friend to many of us. Join me for a special tribute to the great Hal Galper this Saturday at noon on Living Jazz, right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Access to healthcare in the region is becoming more challenging as sweeping Medicaid changes enacted earlier this month as part of the so-called Big Beautiful Bill signed into law by President Trump could deal a severe blow to rural hospitals already on the financial brink. But a new healthcare initiative, the Highland Health Access Initiative, aims to improve access to health services at a grassroots community level. It's the cover story in the August edition of Manor Inc., which is out now, Sullivan County's award-winning, youth-driven community newspaper. Manor Inc.'s Oscar Clevenger reported on the initiative led by NYU's Applied Global Public Health Initiative and Sullivan 180.
This was organized by the NYU educator Dr. Christopher Dickey as part of the Highland Health Access Initiative, which is sponsored by the New York Health Foundation and helped or supported by Sullivan 180. It is a program attempting to make a health system from the ground up for the Highland area, and was started in Berryville. And it's just meant to make a different type of solution for the healthcare in rural areas like Sullivan County.
So it's called the Highland Health Access Initiative.
Yes.
What were people saying at this event? What kinds of things did you hear?
They were saying things such as they didn't like the inefficiency of the healthcare system. They didn't like the transport system. They didn't like how needlessly complicated things were. But it was mainly an issue of the system that we have now not fitting all their needs entirely.
And Dr. Dickey actually referred to Sullivan County as a, quote, healthcare desert. Why did he say that?
Well, part of that was because of the access to drugs and the emergency care being not very great, and as well as the mental health and family care, and also the fact that most of the people have to drive each other around, so transport is a big issue.
He said it was a very inefficient rural healthcare system.
Yes.
And also said that because Garnet Health is the predominant healthcare provider in the region, he said that not going to go to Garnet Health to fix the issue, but to go to the community. So what does this kind of family doctor philosophy say? It's kind of a different way to go about it.
Yeah, it's attempting to not only find a solution for community, but find the solution from the community. A lot of this was trying to distance themselves from the current system we have for health, which is like hospitals made for kind of the big city where you can have everybody on deck, all the doctors waiting for everybody constantly. But in rural areas where there's not that much traffic constantly, it makes for a lot of inefficiencies and a lot of, like, not necessarily overpaying, but it makes a lot of issues where you're having staff waiting and you can't necessarily do anything with them, and they're just waiting there to do nothing. So you have to make cuts and you have to find issues, but this system is trying to find a way to make a system for the community, by the community, and is really just trying to live in symbiosis more so than the system we have now.
He also mentioned the part of this approach, an integral part of the approach is telemedicine. How does that help?
It might sound a little scary, but telemedicine is the idea that they're going to not only have doctors kind of far away on Zoom, so you'd Zoom in, you'd have your doctor talk to you. It's more of an efficient system because you don't have to have the doctor constantly waiting for somebody, and they can see multiple patients in one day, have back-to-back meetings, possibly. But mainly it's just there to help because you can have a doctor constantly there to help you, and you can have someone on staff constantly, despite them being far away. It sort of eliminates the issue of transport a little bit, and it seems like that is the way this is going to go because telemedicine just fits more of the problems that we have in Sullivan County.
What did he say about artificial intelligence and the role that that plays?
He said that it's going to, whatever they're going to do, it's definitely going to have AI in it. And while that might seem scary to some people, the fact that AI is getting close, he promises that there is going to be a very human core at the center of this.
And just as your observation, and you know, reporting this story for Manor Inc., what do you think about this solution and the problem they're trying to solve here with Dr. Dickey's approach?
I think it's a very creative solution, considering the fact that very big hospitals oftentimes get overworked or they don't necessarily have enough work in rural places. I think it's interesting. I think it's optimistic. I hope it will work. I hope for everything that will go swell. And they're making a lot of strides in what they've been able to do so far. So I'm hoping for them.
Also, on page 7 of this issue of Manor Inc., there's a QR code so that folks can participate in Sullivan County's Department of Public Health's County Health Survey. They want to better understand and support residents' future healthcare needs, and asking folks to use that QR code or visit the web link there. You can find it at Manor Inc. Let's talk about another story that's in the issue. It's about the construction that's going on in Livingston Manor on Main Street, number 42 and number 44. There's another building, I believe, too, at number 43. Buildings under construction on Main Street. They've been going for many months, but it seems that there have been some hurdles. What are some of the hurdles that you guys found out?
Part of it was that the original contractor did not follow the plans, which made the integrity. Well,
that,
yeah,
that doesn't really work if your contractor doesn't follow the plan.
He had some issues there. He said that it was a very complex renovation of the place, and that the foundation itself made for a much harder building.
You talked to Randy Lewis, the principal owner there. He talked to Manor Inc. and told you also that the popular restaurant Cafe 43 will soon reopen with a brand new kitchen, slightly expanded dining area. And also that the other buildings are moving forward, but not really a definite date on when things would be opening.
No, there's no definite date, really. But it seems like it's coming along nicely, with a lot more windows and a lot more space. The exterior and the interior, I think, are being renovated.
The other story you have is about the O&W Museum reopening. What's going on at the Roscoe O&W Rail Museum?
Well, it's been reopened after it was closed in 2006 due to flooding. Most of the stuff has been repaired. Most of the stuff has been safe kept, and the restoration's been well. A colleague of mine, Ethan Sprouse, went to visit it, and he has a great review of it. But I think it's a fun place to visit if you want to check it out.
If you're a lover of trains or transport of that area, they've got all kinds of stuff. A large collection of relics from the railroad's past, from train parts to model train sets to worker uniforms. Good to see that they have reopened. Oscar Clevenger from the Manor Inc. team, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tim.
And Manor Inc. is Sullivan County's award-winning youth-driven community newspaper. Their new edition is out now on newsstands and also available at manor-inc.org. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, Tom Candela is here with a preview of the latest episode of Curtain Call, our theater podcast. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, we'll rebroadcast a 2016 conversation with Bruce Springsteen. The legendary rock star spent 7 years on his autobiography, covering everything from his childhood and early days performing to his international success and the ambivalence he felt about it. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And every Friday at WJFFradio.org and wherever you get your podcasts, you can find a new episode of our theater podcast, Curtain Call, hosted by our very own Tom Candela. Tom is here now. Hello. How are you?
Good. And welcome to August. Here we are.
We were just talking about, like, we can't believe it's August. August 1st.
Yep.
You have a really interesting episode here.
Yes.
It's about a solo performance called Lily Darwin, Lily slash Darwin.
Correct, correct. A solo performance written and performed by Darwin Del Fabbro and directed by a young lady named Megan Finn. And it's premiering over at The Tank in New York City. It's a theater piece that intertwines the life of Lily Elb, one of the first recipients of gender-affirming surgery back in the 1930s, believe it or not, with Darwin's own experience as a transgender artist reclaiming her voice on stage. And like some of our local theater companies, NACL and Farm Arts Collective's Lucy Joseph, Lily Darwin explores identity, truth, and transformation in ways that are both deeply personal and universally renaissance. And I think, you know, political stakes of telling stories like this don't often get center stage. And this is why this kind of work really matters more than ever, than ever.
All right. Let's listen to an excerpt of the latest episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela featuring the new solo performance, Lily Darwin.
Today we have some very special guests. I want to talk about this new show that's coming to New York City in August, Lily Darwin. It is a bold and intimate solo performance that weaves together the lives of two individuals separated by time, but united by identity, artistry, and transformation. This piece explores the story of Lily Elba, one of the first known recipients of gender-affirming surgery in the early 20th century, alongside the present-day journey of the artist who tells her story on stage, Darwin Del Fabbro. Joining me on the phone are two of the forces behind this extraordinary work. Darwin Del Fabbro is a Brazilian performer, writer, and producer whose work spans theater, television, film, and music. Lily Darwin marks her return to the stage after her gender transition. And Megan Finn, artistic director of The Tank, is the show's director, known for her fearless, genre-defying approach to new work and her deep commitment to stories that challenge, surprise, and move. Darwin, Megan, I want to welcome you both to Curtain Call.
Thanks for having us. Oh, what a great intro.
Oh,
I want to put that in my dating profile.
Well, we're going to start with you, Darwin, because Lily Darwin explores, obviously, the overlapping journeys between yourself and Lily Elb. So describe for our listeners who Lily Elb was and at what point in your life did you first encounter her story?
So I first encountered her story when I was 13 in Brazil. She was one of the first transgender women to go to reassignment surgery. And this diary that compiles letters and journals from Lily from 1907 to 1930 was published in 1933. And I read that when I was 13. And I was so moved by, but I didn't know the person I would become and the choices I would make. But she was always there with me. And 2 years ago, I paused everything to do my own transitions. I did 7 surgeries in 2 years. I stopped acting, I stopped writing, singing to focus on my happiness. And within that, I created this play and this conversation between what if I play these two characters, and we start to see the similarities of 1930 and 2025.
Yes.
And finally now I'm a woman playing a real woman on the stage. And I'm so grateful and happy with the opportunity that The Tank and Megan are giving me.
Well, Megan, when did you first become aware of this piece?
Yes. When Darwin appeared on stage at The Tank, I remember thinking, what a talented actor we had here. And then quite recently, she sent me the script as it is. And that's when I discovered what a tremendous writer she is. And it was from that we embarked on this iteration.
Darwin, I think we really have to stress how this was 1930s. These transitions was almost unheard of. I mean, not only was it something probably taboo society-wise, but it was surgically incredible.
Yes, she was one of the first to go to the reassignment surgery where no one knew if that would work, and it did work. So the empowerment and the strength and the search for looking to a way to be happy and to really look herself in the mirror and see the real truth. So a lot of things are still taboo, and
yes,
we still have to reinforce and talk about it. And I'm so glad, first of all, Megan is a wonderful director who, every time that we are on the stage together rehearsing, I sometimes stop and say, I will remember this moment in my life so clearly for the rest of my life. And I think it's one of the most challenging works that I've done so far, but I'm so happy and I'm so honored to be working with a real true artist so talented like Megan.
So what role, if any, did the process or learning about Lily Elbe and writing and performing it play in your personal journey, in your personal transition?
Well, as I said, I have the contact with her material when I was 13. So she has been in my life since then, and we tried different versions of this, and I was still thinking that, oh, this is not right, or there's something missing. To know that what I was missing was actually finding the truth and the happiness in my own life besides the stage. When I started to read those words and say, oh, this is actually not a character. This is very similar to the struggles that I am experiencing, and being on the stage and discovering these characters and really discovering myself. I wanted to put that on the stage and I want to share that with people. So that's what are we doing right now.
Well, Megan, you're getting a lot of kudos here. Let's talk a little bit more about The Tank and how it was formed, a little bit more about your involvement in it.
So The Tank, we're a nonprofit arts presenter and producer. And our mission all along in our 22 years has been to try to remove economic barriers from the creation of new work. And I've been working to try to kind of proliferate The Tank's model beyond with a project called Revenue NYC, which takes our model and uses it at different venues across the city, both large and small, to create a place where artists can continue to take risks, tell stories that need to be told, and afford to do so. So I will say, like, my hope is that audiences continue to take a risk on and enjoy the adventure of new work, because when you have a space where artists can afford to fail, they often succeed.
It sounds like you're giving the artist a place to cultivate their art and to allow it to grow where works like Lily Darwin can thrive.
Correct. Our emphasis is on trying to allow those artists to try new things. And fortunately, those artists quickly move on to larger venues, often from The Tank, and more audiences get to see their work.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Limefest itself, because that is part of The Tank's programming.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have this ongoing festival every summer, and it's a really wonderful way to get to know new artists. We invite submissions for that via open submissions. So we will have, in addition to this show, which is the main stage show as part of Limefest, there will also be performances throughout the month, and it's a way of bringing up and supporting the work of women, gender nonconforming and non-binary artists here. And it's something we're very proud of. And I think something that this piece for me has been a learning opportunity too, alongside the artistic endeavor, because I've learned so much in doing this piece. Just, I've learned from Lily Elbe, I've learned from Darwin, things that I didn't know. And I think, and truly the power of it is, this is Darwin's story. Whether or not you are part of the trans community or you're not, you have the opportunity to empathize with this story because it's maybe one you've never heard before. And that's, to me, that's the whole point of theater, is to tell stories and allow that kind of space where we can listen and learn. When you open your heart and mind to a new piece of theater, it can change you, and I think it's very powerful.
We're still learning and seeing the consequences in our bodies and adjusting, and I'm still learning a lot, and it's a beautiful journey. I'm so happy. As I mentioned, I'm finally started to see the beauty on myself, and within that, seeing the beauty everything around me. It's about becoming better versions of ourselves. And we are all trying to become that better version. I'm very hopeful that people are still intrigued of learning and becoming better human beings.
Right.
So when you come to see Lily Darwin, you learned about this new trans, but also I hope you learned a lot about yourself.
From a director's point of view, Megan, do you feel when we're talking about trans histories and identities being shown on stage, do you feel that theater's doing enough to tell these stories authentically?
Right now, especially in this community where people's lives and needs and happiness are being politicized and challenged, I think that this is an opportunity. And I think other theaters are doing the work. And I hope that more do in places outside of New York. You know, I would love this piece to influence others. I think it's an opportunity to bring people together to learn and hear the story.
Give me the show times, dates, how people can get tickets, all of that.
You can get tickets at lilydarwin.com. You can visit the Tank to see the performance at 7 p.m. from August 2nd through August 23rd. And the Tank is located at 312 West 36th Street between 8th and 9th Avenues in Manhattan. Easily accessible from Penn Station or Port Authority. And you can also follow us on Instagram at TheTankNYC. And that's how people can find out more about the show.
Darwin, as a final question, what would you like audiences, especially cisgender folks who are new to Lily's story and to your story, what would you like them to take away from not only a performance, but from your work as a whole?
We're all human beings. We all have our struggles. I just hope that people who come see the play leave with a little more of sympathy and understanding that every journey is different and every journey has its beauty. Look yourself in the mirror and find that beauty, because you are beautiful, you are powerful, and things will come your way at the right time.
I want to thank you both for taking the time out of your busy day to spend time with me and being featured on Curtain Call.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Tom's podcast, Curtain Call, is available at our website, wjffradio.org. You can hear the full conversation and you can check out past episodes as well. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And for the celebration of our 35th year, bringing you local news, culture, and NPR, Radio Catskill put out a call to local creatives in May for a design to be featured on T-shirts and other merchandise. Naya Reeby of Parksville was our winner. Her unique take on the past, present, and future of radio, along with her intriguing use of color and our signature lightning bolts, stood out and captured Radio Catskill's energy. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett spoke with Naya about her creative process, her homegrown artistic vision, and her future aspirations to animate for the small screen.
Visual art is central to the artistic makeup of the Catskills. Our region is iconic, inspiring some of the great painters of the 19th century, and to this day is still birthing new art collectives to highlight its unique beauty and culture. But for Naya Reeby, she is learning from the past and using new technology to create innovative graphic design inspired by the place she calls home. So do you live in Sullivan County? Can you tell me a little bit about your background?
Yeah, so I do live here in Sullivan County. I grew up in Parksville. Currently, I'm in Woodridge.
And you just said you finished undergrad a little while ago. Where did you go to school and what did you study?
SUNY Sullivan, and I actually did get an associate's degree in graphic design. I actually started off in psychology, ironically enough, and I was like, yeah, this is not for me. And I wanted to do more art stuff because I've been drawing since I was little. And I was like, you know what? The art program that they had was graphic design. So I tested it out and I actually really liked it.
do you prefer the use of technology in your art, or do you like drawing more, or do you kind of like a combination of both?
So I would say probably a combination of both. I did start off with traditional, like drawing pencil on paper, and then I got an iPad for the first time and I was like, oh, I can do digital art. Cool. So I do a mixture of both. I usually sketch traditionally, and then I'll import it onto my iPad and then finish it out digitally.
When you're working on a new artwork, do you think of what the image is going to be first? Do you think of how you're going to construct it? Or do you think of kind of the message of it first? Or do you not necessarily think about art that way?
No, it's a bit of everything, really. It depends on what I'm drawing, because I like to come up with the concept in my head and then try and sketch out a bunch of variations of how I want that to look. I do really prioritize like messaging and stuff, and like what the personal message is in my art specifically. So I try and use like symbolism objects and just symbolism in general to try and get that message through.
What are some other symbols that you've used, whether it's the one you did for the shirt or just in other pieces that you've done?
Specifically, I'm kind of like spiritual and I love cardinals, for example. So I love to try and use like the red symbolism, like any color symbolism is really important. Birds, angels, stuff like that. And yeah, specifically for the Radio Catskills shirt, I did try and tie in the lightning bolts because I know that's like a big thing for you guys. And I was just like, I really want it to be personal. So I wanted to tie it in as best as I could.
How did you find out about the contest and why was it so important to submit a design?
Yeah, so I actually saw it in an email from Delaware Arts Alliance. And I'm always, because me myself, I'm pretty integrated into the community, at least I want to be. And so I really try and take up any art opportunity I can to try and make a name for myself, try and be connected to as many people in the community that I can be. And so I saw this opportunity and I was really interested. I wanted to challenge myself. I've never really created a design for a shirt. And so I just sketched up a design and I put it into Adobe Illustrator and worked on it. And I came up with this and I was like, listen, I might not win. I might, who knows, take a shot in the dark. And yeah, and luckily I was able to. And I'm so thankful for the opportunity to even have been picked.
And something I noticed about your design right away is how much color you had in it. You know, there's oranges, there's blues, there's yellows. How did you pick those colors? Like, is that part of the symbolism as well?
So it was a bit of like just color scheme, kind of like color pattern, color wheel sort of thing. I just chose orange because it's like super vibrant. And I knew I wanted to stick exactly with the yellow you guys had for the lightning bolt. And I was just like, what's a color that's really going to pop? And then when you look at the color wheel, blue is like right across from orange. And I'm like, yeah, that's going to work. And there was kind of like an old timey inspiration behind it. I did like base the robot's head like off of an old radio. And I tried my best to incorporate that. And then with the modern pop of like color, I really thought that it would tie the two together.
What are you working on now?
Yeah, so I actually got a decent amount of stuff going on. I'm working on a book cover actually for a local author. I am currently also working with a company down in Florida for mobility and transportation equipment. I want to launch my online shop for my business. So I got to create some like merch and designs for that. So a lot of stuff, but we're juggling it.
Where do you hope this takes you? Where do you hope that the path of art and creation takes you?
Honestly, ever since I was little, I've always wanted to create a TV show. So I was really hoping that like with all this practice and between like marketing and like illustration, I was really hoping like maybe one day, who knows, I do want to do like a cartoony style. Like I want to have my drawings on the big screen. I just feel like that'd be so cool. I love anime personally. It's just so impressive. The person I'm really inspired by right now is someone named Vivian, and she created Hell of a Boss and Has Been Hotel, and it's like an indie production, and like I'm just really inspired by it and hoping I could do something similar. But also like for now, I do want to make it a business and help out the local community.
And we're really excited for our listeners to know more about you. Yeah. And I want to see your animated TV show. I'm supporting you on this. That sounds so cool.
Thank you so much.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
And you can see and buy Naya's really cool t-shirt she did for our 35th anniversary at our website, wjffradio.org. Or you can grab it when you see us in the community next time, which is next weekend at the Bagel Festival in Monticello. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan Allies Leading Together, committed to ensuring the safety of our community. Protect those most important by keeping medications in a secure space. Be a part of the solution. More at saltcares.com. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.